We turn our attention now to our regular portion of the roundtable, and one of the issues we'll take a look at is President Bush offers more insight into the U.S. plan for Iraq. Joining us today to discuss this topic and others from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., economist and author Julianne Malveaux. She's president and CEO of Last Word Productions. And from our bureau here in New York, Pedro Noguera, professor of education at New York University. And Robert George is with us as well, editorial writer for The New York Post. All right, folks, welcome. One of the things that we want to talk about first off is the idea of the president making the suggestion that the U.S. government is no longer planning to continue to fund reconstruction projects in Iraq. This appears to some to be one of the signs of pulling out. But Pedro, let me start with you. The idea that when this war started, we heard from this administration that one of the things they would make sure that they did was rebuild the infrastructure of something, quite frankly, that they destroyed.
Well, I think it's a sign of what's to come, which is an attempt to cut and run, which is exactly what Bush has said he wouldn't do. And I think it also reflects the fact that the costs have just gone out of control. There's no accountability for the spending that's gone on in Iraq. There's widespread reports of corruption with respect to funds that have been allocated for infrastructure. We were told earlier that the oil revenues from Iraq would pay for the reconstruction. That clearly is not happening, and oil revenues are actually down, and lines for gasoline are just growing. So it's another sign that the situation is in crisis over there. There's a mess that the Bush administration does not know how to respond to, and they are trying to cut their losses.
Robert, I'm going to go to you. You are sometimes, I underline sometimes, an apologist, but in some people's minds for this administration and what they've done. I said in some people's minds. I can see your look. But talk to me about this particular instance. This is going to be hard for this administration to defend.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. And I have personally been critical of many of the steps that the administration has done with respect to Iraq. The fact is. Obviously, there are clear political issues that are going to be at play here. This is 2006. It's an election year, and they're going to have to balance an indication of some kind of progress, which I think actually the case can very clearly be made, at least on the political side, that is the Iraq political side, that there is definitely progress going on. At the same time, though, they don't want to make Iraq a complete and an inexhaustible money pit, and I think they feel that as much money as possible as can be defended domestically has been spent right now, and they're starting to pull it back. I also agree, though, with what Pedro said, is that there's been clear cases of corruption, and that needs to be focused on and addressed.
All right, let's go to The Economist. Julianne Malveaux, you heard what Robert George just suggested, that at some point war, as we've seen historically, can become a money pit for years and years and years. But is this just the economic side of paying for military strife that you bring to a country?
Well, let's face it, this is not a politically popular war. Yeah, you know, Colin Powell said early on, if you break it, you're going to have to fix it. And the fact is that Mr. Bush didn't want to fix it. It is a money pit. People talked about being in there through 2008, 2010. But we had very ambitious plans. We talked about hospitals. We were talking about schools there. I remember Hillary Rodham Clinton saying, how can you build hospitals in Baghdad when you can't build them in Brooklyn? But that's how ambitious we were at one point in time. The only silver lining here, Ed, is that the United States tried to be the Lone Ranger the whole while with Iraq. And as we talk about pulling out, it forces the rest of the world to look at this. And so hopefully, through the United Nations and through others, there will be a commitment to rebuilding. If Iraq is not rebuilt, count on the so-called terrorism that we're supposed to quash to continue, and count on there being world consequences. So perhaps this is a humbling moment for Mr. Bush, and he will now have to talk to allies.
All right, let me go to a story that we've been covering for quite some time on this program, and it seems to grow and grow. And now that we're seeing factions build to both sides of what should be done with the Martin Luther King Center for Nonviolent Social Change in Atlanta, there has been for a number of years a question of whether the King family should in fact sell it to the National Park Service for their auspices in terms of running it. Now we're seeing a split amongst the children. Bernice and Martin Luther King III believe the sale of the center would compromise the center's independent voice. Yet we hear from the other children, the other two children, Yolanda and Dexter King, as well as former UN Ambassador Andrew Young, all of whom sit on the board of this center, Julianne Malveaux, suggesting that the sale would be for the best. The center has fallen into dire straits, and I think all involved, in fact, believe it could be run better, and that we have seen for perhaps too many years novices try to run this. Touchy situation because of the King family status. What's the thought here when we're now seeing a split in the family?
Well, the center is in horrible repair, Ed. I was there about a year ago, and the papers, what concern me most, some of the papers are just, you know, not well organized. Some of the reporters have noted, they need almost $12 million in repairs. And so when
you say the papers, Julianne, just for clarification, these are Dr. King's private papers that are kept there at the center. And as many of us know, as the years go by, they should be kept in certain conditions and the like to make sure that that they don't deteriorate. Pick up.
Absolutely. Clay Carson has a big portion of those there at Stanford, but there's still other things, copies of speeches, things that researchers will want to use into perpetuity, and that really ought to be better cared for. So it's really a daunting situation. And as you say, it's always horrible to see a family in disagreement here. I would not like to see the Park Service get it from the perspective of any politics. And quite frankly, I always think about those politics there. You know, Mr. Bush tried to expropriate the King message a couple of years ago, and it was just chilling when you notice the economic aspects of Dr. King's message. But while I would not like to see the Park Service get it, I have huge questions about why the King family, if they can't run it, can't contract it out, you can't tell me that they're not capable African-American people that can run and administer this thing.
Pedro, forgive me, Robert, but Pedro is an educator. When you take a look at this idea of, as Julianne says, a center falling into disrepair and all of the wonderful things that are availed to people that, A, go there, and particularly scholars, even though we should note that the King family has been very close to the vest with all, and that's not an assertion either way, but they've been close to the vest with all of what is their ownership. What is your thought as an educator when you look at this situation?
I think it's a sign that the King family, sadly, continues to see this as their legacy and not as a much broader legacy. And they have to stop seeing it as a family operation and realize that this really belongs now to the whole country. And if we're going to make sure that children have access to this center, that it does serve an educational purpose to schools, to universities, it's got to be well-maintained, and it can't be holden to the family's squabbles and their very narrow interest. And I say this not to attack the family members, because I think they probably have their best interest in mind, but I think they're focusing too narrowly on their legacy and not the broader issues
at
hand.
I would agree with you, and I would even go further than that and say, I mean, I think the family has for the last couple few decades focused narrowly, as you say, on their own legacy. I think their choices in terms of when they want to rent out or lease out the "I Have a Dream" speech focuses on the money that comes into the family and to their broader concerns, where as opposed to letting the message itself spread out as far and wide to in as many places as possible. I think that given that I understand the concern that there might be political aims involved by the National Park Service taking over the center. The thing is, though, it has already taken over other aspects of where King has preached and so forth, and as far as I can tell, has done that admirably. And I think it would be best for all concerned.
When you say that, we should know, just for those who've not been down in Atlanta, there's an entire block really dedicated, including the church, the home he grew up in, a couple of other homes on that block that the National Park Service, in fact, has run.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I think Julianne may be able to speak to this a little bit better since she's been there more recently. But I think, given that the National Park Service has managed to take over those things without any political misappropriation or anything like that, I think they should be given the same opportunity to do this as well.
Julianne, let me ask you this, and you can pick up on the point that Robert wanted you to address. But there is a side that will suggest, for all of the pomp and circumstance and glory that is the aura of the king image, Dr. King's image, there is the reality that this family is not wealthy, so to speak, and that for a great degree of their livelihood, particularly Mrs. King, this is the ability to live comfortably, to hold on to this legacy as they've had, as
well,
they have.
And a couple years ago, I was trying to finish a film on Dr. King's legacy and got into one of those interminable legal quagmires with the Kings. And Dexter and I had a conversation where he said, look, my father left his intellectual property to us because he didn't leave us any money. And that's real. I mean, I think we have to think about that. The last time that this issue of sale came up, our predominantly Republican Congress poo-pooed the notion that large numbers of dollars should be paid. So what are they talking about paying? If they're saying it's a token payment and we're going to do the upkeep, that doesn't leave the King family very much. If they're saying, I think the number that bandied about a couple of years ago was $20 million, and there was enormous opposition to that. So we have to bear that in mind and balance some of that. As you say, this is not a wealthy family. Coretta Scott King still can't really communicate her wishes. I also think there's some room for compromise here. I think that leasing as opposed to selling, there is room for compromise here, and it's just unfortunate, just a week or so before Dr. King's birthday, that we have this kind of controversy in the media. But Pedro was utterly right. I think we all are. This is everybody's legacy. So we all have to work to figure out how to preserve it. And I'm not sure the Park Service is the only option that ought to be on the table.
I'll make the suggestion in terms of numbers, Julianne, just as a point of reference. The Park Service reported last year an estimated need of $11.6 million to repair some of the things that you've talked about, including leaks in the reflective pool, collapsed and damaged pipes that threaten the well-being of those newspapers and the like. And I think, Julianne, you bring up a good point as we close today, and that's the idea that if we in fact do believe that Dr. King's legacy is a legacy that should be shared by all Americans, we should take a look at this center, particularly African Americans in this country, and know and understand what in fact this man meant to us, and maybe preserve the legacy of what has been shared with the world. And the idea that King in January for his birthday in February is co-opted by corporations, then if we're going to give him to corporations for those 2 months, the other 10 months of the year, we darn sure better take up our defenses and make sure that his legacy remains as strong as he was.
And somehow,
we don't have a culture of giving. The challenge here is that in our community, the Muhammad Ali Museum just went up. Less than $1 million of those monies raised came from African Americans. What we have to deal with is a culture of giving. We can't say we don't have the money anymore.
And balance,
in fact, there's $750 billion dollars in our community.
And somehow there should be some kind of a way to balance the King family's financial security with the broader legacy for all Americans.
All right. Pedro, Robert, Julianne, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Abbreviated
Always
roundtable, but spirited nonetheless. Thank you.
Thank you.